Hello and welcome to this episode of the Star Wars Universe Podcast. Today we're continuing our coverage of Season 2 of Star Wars Rebels with a season finale, Episodes 21 and 22, Twilight of the Apprentice. And these are so good that we're joined not only by Riki and Sarah Hayashi, but also special guest Paul Hoppe. All that more after a commercial break we have no control over. Welcome back. I'm Matthew, your host. Let me ask this, folks. Would you want to talk about an episode in which the Inquisitors, who've been following our heroes all along, we have a final confrontation against them, and the Inquisitors are defeated? But what about if we got an episode about Ezra actually starting to be tempted by the dark side, and starting to think that maybe Kanan isn't teaching him everything he could, and that maybe some parts of his potential are not being fully unlocked? Or what if we can have an episode where Darth Maul comes back? Darth Maul, of course, of Phantom Menace and then of Star Wars Clone Wars. And he comes back and he gets into a whole thing with Ezra, and maybe he's going to be a new mentor for Ezra. And he fights with Kanan, and Kanan goes blind, and we deal with all the consequences of that. Or about if we have an episode of Chopper getting to actually pilot a TIE fighter for the first time. Or just for like one more kind of episode, what if we get an episode of Darth Vader getting to have his final confrontation with Ahsoka Tano? What if we had all of those stories in one two-part episode, and somehow it doesn't feel like any of them are rushed? They all get their full vein. Well, that's what we're talking about. This is widely regarded as one of, if not the best, story arc in Star Wars Rebels, beloved by many. And I'm here with both Riki and Sarah and Paul. How are we folks doing tonight? How are you feeling about getting to talk about these episodes?
Super good. I feel like the Chopper piloting the TIE doesn't get maybe.
I was maybe trying to pad the list a little bit, but
that's fair.
I just rewatched them just like literally 2 minutes ago, and I just was amazed at how many of the different storylines all come through in this episode.
Yes, so I asked people on Twitter what they thought the best season finale of a TV show was, because I think this is among the best of all time. And obviously it's not a very watched TV show compared to some of the others, but people brought up The West Wing Season 2, Two Cathedrals. They brought up The Good Place Season 1. I believe it's called Michael's Gambit. So I went back and watched The Good Place, and it's a really good episode. But I feel like it's so highly regarded because it comes at the end of an amazing season. Mm. And the episode itself, maybe, doesn't hold up as a single episode of TV. This one, Twilight of the Apprentice, absolutely does. I think the season two of Rebels is great, but you can just watch this episode, you know, if you know all the storylines already, and just watch it over and over, and it is just amazing.
Yeah. If nothing else, we're going to talk about all the different storylines, but the 7 minutes or so, and it amazed me when I realized it's only 7 minutes, but the confrontation between Vader and Ahsoka, Anakin and Ahsoka, is just, I've probably watched that 7 minutes 30 times, because it is just, it tells both of their stories so well and encapsulates so much and has probably some of the most quotable lines ever in Star Wars, in it, at least from my perspective. Paul, you've not been on most of Rebels, and you enjoyed the show. You were the one who got me into Clone Wars. I got you to watch this show, but you mentioned this was one that you definitely wanted to be a part of the conversation for. How do you feel about these episodes?
Yeah, I wanted to show up on the Clone Wars at some point, but it just never kind of worked out. And then, you know, then we did some Bad Batch, and I really wanted to get to do some Rebels at some point. And I was just like, if there was one Rebels episode that I was going to want to be on and talk about, it was going to be these two. I wouldn't say this is necessarily my absolute favorite season ending episode. The season two of Mandalorian for me is way, way, way up there. I've watched it so many times compared to, I don't rewatch the whole show. I just rewatch that. And sometimes I just rewatch the last like 10 minutes. But yeah. Here, I completely agree with what you're all saying, what you're saying, Riki, about, yeah, you can just, I mean, I did rewatch all of Rebels-ish over the last few months because Lee finally watched all of the Clone Wars and Bad Batch and Rebels in like a 3 week period or something. And I kind of would like come into the room when it was an episode I loved. But then just now I was just like, I will go and watch these two episodes. And they work as like an independent movie, basically. And I think the way they managed to cram so many compelling storylines into such short runtime is by not cutting back to Chopper base, right?
Yeah.
That could, they could have done that. They could have, a lot of these shows, like, they'll go back and instead they just have the little lead in with Rex talking to Ahsoka. And then at the end they have, you know, them returning, or some of them returning, and, you know, that kind of payoff. But they don't keep going, but they don't have some B plot that's just like totally irrelevant, right? Here they have an A and a B plot, but they're both taking place in the Sith Temple, about what are Ahsoka and Kanan doing, and then what's Ezra doing with Maul, who's dropped the Darth, and then another Darth shows up. Yeah, I just absolutely love these two episodes. I could watch them over and over and over.
I think calling it a movie is perfect. I will say, on your poll, Riki, I submitted what I think is my personal favorite, which is season two, for some reason, always has a great finale.
Season two are great seasons of television.
West Wing, Rebels. For me, it's season finale of season two of The Wire. Season finales of a lot of The Wire seasons are great, but that one in particular is just phenomenal. But this one also, it just feels like there's so much that's been building. We've been having the Ahsoka Vader story building. We've been having Ezra building. All throughout our discussions, we'll talk about it especially with this episode, I've been so fascinated in what they're doing with Kanan and Ezra, and that they're not traditional Jedi. You know, that Kanan left the Jedi left him when he was like 7 or 8 years old. Ezra's never seen the Jedi outside of Kanan and the temples. And letting Ezra wrestle with the dark side a little bit in this, you know, and that Maul is presented to him as a mentor figure. And I think eventually we realize Maul is definitely trying to pull a trick on him. But I think Maul quite sincerely believes the things he's trying to tell Ezra. You know, that I think he genuinely thinks that he can help Ezra become a stronger Force user. And seeing that while Maul is clearly so angry and rejected at feeling anger and rejection from the Sith, it's just, yeah, there's so many levels of complexity there. Let me give a quick episode summary just for people who haven't seen these episodes or haven't seen them in a while. Just kind of know what we're talking about, and then we'll probably go through the different kind of plot lines. Ahsoka, Ezra, Kanan, and Chopper arrive on Malachor, a Sith world long forbidden to the Jedi in search of knowledge. Discovering a cavern containing a Sith temple and the site of an ancient battlefield between Sith and Jedi who used cross-guard lightsabers, which is kind of cool, because that's the thing that Kylo Ren uses in the new movies.
Yeah, and seeing a green cross-guard lightsaber I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. They soon are attacked by a new Inquisitor, the Eighth Brother, who is hunting a mysterious hermit calling himself Old Master. When Ezra encounters the hermit, he reveals himself to be Maul, not Darth Maul, as Paul said, and offers to help Ezra get into the temple, aiding him in recovering a Sith holocron. When the other Inquisitors arrive and alert Darth Vader of their presence, Ezra convinces the group to work together in spite of Kanan's fears that Maul is corrupting a student, allowing them to finally kill the three Inquisitors. However, Maul soon betrays the group and blinds Kanan with his lightsaber, revealing his true intentions of making Ezra his apprentice. Although sightless, Kanan dons the mask of a fallen Jedi Temple guard and manages to throw Maul from the top of the temple. Ahsoka finally faces Darth Vader, who has cornered Ezra and destroyed his lightsaber, and comes to terms with his identity as Anakin Skywalker as she engages him in a duel, while Kanan and Ezra remove the Sith holocron. Unable to abandon her old master, Ahsoka stays within the crumbling temple and stalls Vader while Ezra, Kanan, and Chopper flee the planet and reunite with the ghost crew. Maul flees Malachor in one of the Inquisitor's ships while Vader, who survived the destruction of the temple, walks away as a convoy watches from above and an unknown figure is briefly seen limping into the shadows. As the ghost crew tries to cope with their losses, Ezra continues to meditate on the Sith holocron and finally succeeds in opening it. So where do we want to start? Like, there's so much going on here.
I want to start with the fact that this episode, the entry into the Sith Temple, begins with them falling into it completely non-lethally, which I feel like is a callback kind of to Maul falling to his not doom. The Emperor has fallen to his not doom. Like, falling is just super non-lethal in Star Wars if you're a Force user anyway, you know, unless like they want it to be.
We've continually asked why there's no, like, OSHA in this universe that insists on handrails or, like, railings on big pits in workplaces. And maybe that's why.
It's ableism.
The temple has elevators. It's a pyramid, and it has elevators in the corners with no handrails whatsoever.
No safety.
Yeah.
But it's like a pyramid, so maybe you could just slide down, kind of.
Yeah, just like the Eighth Brother did.
Just get really bad rock burn.
Yeah.
On your backside.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Maul, because earlier on, Matthew, you mentioned that he was pulling one over on Ezra, but I believe that Maul is very legitimate in his intentions.
Yeah.
And the summary mentions that he wants Ezra to be his apprentice. I think Maul wants that. He believes, maybe even more than this temple, which is a weapon, that Ezra will be his weapon for revenge against Sidious and Vader.
The Empire, yeah.
Well, and so let me ask you there, because the part of it, I think that's very true. I think he's very legitimate. I think he's generally, he's doing a very Sith thing, which is to kind of like use half-lies and deceptions to slowly lead someone to the truth. A Jedi would never do something like that. Like, they would always just tell the truth, not from a certain point of view or anything. From a certain point of view, yeah. But early in the episode, Maul acts as though he doesn't know what's going on, and he doesn't even remember his own name. And do you think that, is that level of confusion genuine, or is that somewhat to kind of ease Ezra in and make Ezra want to help him?
So I think, like, when Ezra finds him and he's pulling his, like, Jafar from Aladdin old man act, which I will make several Aladdin parallels throughout the first episode.
Go for it.
I think he is trying to trick Ezra at that point because he knows he needs a second Force user just to get into the temple. I think the moment when Maul decides to, like, take Ezra on in this apprentice role is when he, like, they do the Force jump to get him to the floaty island, and Ezra jumps back, and instead of just plucking the holocron from his hand and not helping Ezra up onto the platform and just letting him fall to his death, he actually fully helps Ezra back up. I think that's the moment that Maul decides, okay, I'm gonna take this kid in. I'm not just gonna use him just to get this holocron.
That's fair.
I think there's some room for interpretations in terms of how Maul acts in the very beginning. Clearly, he has been physically broken several times over the course of his life. Mm-hmm. And I think he's also been emotionally broken, right? He was abandoned by Sidious. This is post-Solo, the movie. So at some point, he was in charge of Crimson Dawn. And then Kira comes back and presumably will betray him, I think is what they are setting up. So he has gone through several betrayals. Mm-hmm. And so now has reached this point. So I think it could legitimately be that he is very emotionally broken and has forgotten, or maybe even has chosen to forget his name until it sparks again.
He doesn't actually know his for realsies name, right? Like, Maul, is Maul his actual name? Riki and I were talking about this yesterday. Yeah. And, like, his brother's name is Savage Opress. So, like, I would not be at all surprised if they just named him Maul from the get-go. Is that his Darth name, or does he have a name that's not Maul? Do we know it?
In the canon, like, I think it's never directly addressed, but we do know that generally when someone is Darth something, that is a name that's given to them upon them becoming a Darth. So, yeah, so presumably he would have had some other name before being Darth whatever. I'll also say that in the novel Darth Plagueis, which is not canon, but, like, they keep bringing things from it into canon that I think it's fair to make some connections to it. Basically, like, Sidious is on the planet of Dathomir, and there's this thing where someone is, like, trying to, like, make sure he doesn't wipe everyone out, and they give Sidious a baby. And I'm like, here, you can raise this baby and turn it into your kind of killing machine, and that becomes Maul.
Mm.
He was raised, like, maybe baby Maul knew his name from, he was probably referred to as Maul since he was, like, 6 years old or whatever Dathomiri age, you know, of a baby is. But
yeah, but like the Night Sisters didn't give him, or like if they did give him a name, he doesn't remember what it is anymore.
Right.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which I think is something I really liked about this episode is, you know, I love, and I think I've talked with all of you about this before, I love getting to see like Force users who are kind of in between, you know, the Jedi and the Sith. And we get a wonderful line from Ahsoka about not being a Jedi that we'll talk about. Actually, I didn't even thought of that parallel here, but it's true. And so much of this for Maul is about him wanting, like, he wants the power of the dark side, but it's to go kill the Sith. All of his obsession with Jedi is presumably gone. Like, I still think he's, you know, he wants Obi-Wan as his boyfriend. That's never going to change. That's not his focus right now. His focus is on the Sith. And I love that. It makes him a very interesting sort of middle ground, compelling character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really enjoy the sort of perspective on how Maul became Darth Maul and then how he got betrayed by Sidious or abandoned, that he's got it out for the Sith so much, yet he still seems to be following the Sith way of Yes, partially it's because they're in the temple, right? And you need an apprentice and a master. But he seems to, I think, buy into it still, you know, as like a way. Like, this is the way. Like, yeah. I'm going to kill you guys. Like, the Mandalorians are always killing each other. But like...
Like the rule of two, do you mean?
Yeah, the rule of two, basically. Where, you know, I mean, they, in order to lift those things and to do the certain things, they, you know, they're supposed to have two. But...
Right.
But that, you know, I do think he really wants Ezra as his apprentice. And whether that's from the get-go or whether that's later, whether he was deciding whether or not to drop Ezra and just take the holocron, or whether he'd already decided that and that's just kind of like the filmmakers letting us kind of hang in the balance for a moment while Ezra hangs. But I really enjoy that perspective of like, yeah, Maul was taken at some age, like, and had these horrible things, these horrible experiences. And, you know, and then when all the Inquisitors show up, it makes me think like, well, how did they become who they are, you know? And I think it's somewhat similar, right? To some extent. Yeah. Vader showing up later, who we already have all of this empathy for, right? And this understanding of how someone can go from, you know, trying to follow the Jedi way to being a Sith and, you know, from the light side to the dark side and all that.
Right.
So... I think all of that just works together really well.
I think that's so true. And I should also say, for those who haven't watched The Clone Wars, who may be a little confused when we say that Darth Maul was betrayed by Sidious, because in the movies, you know, Sidious sends Darth Maul to fight, but he certainly isn't, like, expecting to send him to his death. But, of course, we see Obi-Wan, as we think, kill him. In The Clone Wars is where Maul sort of, like, survives through, like, Sith magic something, gets a first a spider body, and then kind of the second half of a mechanical body. And at some point during the show, he goes back to Sidious to be like, hey, I'm back. Let's kind of team up. And Sidious is like, absolutely not. I don't want anything to do with you. And so that's, we're talking about Sidious betraying Maul. That's what we're referring to.
And then kills his brother.
Yes, and kills his brother. The aforementioned Savage Opress.
Right, which he references here, yeah.
Yeah. I also really loved, like, so Maul is helping Ahsoka and Kanan fight the Inquisitors. And at first, they don't really trust him, but he's like, I mean, you know, he puts his lightsaber where his mouth is.
Yeah.
But there's a great way of kind of illustrating the difference between his understanding of the Force and the others, and where Ezra has to face a choice and backs away a bit, where there's one moment where they're fighting the... I'm so bad with these. I think it's the seventh sister.
Mm-hmm.
Maul is force choking her and she's kind of just floating in air. And he's basically telling Ezra, like, kill her. You know, go ahead and just kill her. And Ezra just, he can't kill a defenseless person. And if you remember, this has constantly been a test of, can you be a Sith? Like, yeah. Anakin at the beginning of the third prequel. Yeah, like him killing the helpless Dooku. And so I love that Ezra can't do it. Maul just does it himself. And Kanan fights with an Inquisitor that in a way that leads to the Inquisitor's death, but it's very intentional that Kanan doesn't kill the Inquisitor.
Yeah.
He kind of causes the Inquisitor to fall off a cliff as part of their fight. And you could say that's
just fall off a cliff. We got to talk about this, right?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to explain what happens with the helicopter thing.
Yeah.
So he caused him to fall off a cliff, but the guy immediately then does what we've seen him do a bunch of times. He uses the spinning lightsaber as a helicopter, which... Okay, I got some questions.
The damaged lightsaber.
Yeah.
Right. Moving along, and then quickly it breaks and he falls to his death.
Mm-hmm. Presumed death, right? I don't know. He fell and I didn't see a body, and it's Star Wars, so.
Some people have done great analysis that, like, in early Disney movies, up till very recently, they never let the hero actually kill the villain. The villain always charged at the hero ducked, and they fell off a cliff, or, you know, whatever it was. And that's exactly what Kanan... And we've seen Kanan kill people before in combat, but here it's like Kanan's, like, ducks out of the way, the guy plummets off a cliff, and then using the faulty lightsaber is what kills him. And it was just a very... I think it was very intentional that, like, Maul kills his enemies even when they're helpless, Kanan doesn't, and they just happen to die in a very convenient manner.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, classic Disney death falling off of a tall thing. Yeah. Right?
Or Batman 89.
Exactly. No guns, doesn't count.
I just attached them to a gargoyle. Not my fault. Totally not my fault. They told me they fixed it. Wait, no, that's wrong.
The helicopter thing makes no sense. Right? Oh, we all agree with this.
Yeah.
Well, they're maybe combining the Force with something that makes no sense.
But then why haven't they done it before, and why don't they ever do it again?
That's the It's like, why doesn't anybody ever use Force speed outside this Phantom Menace in one shot?
Yeah.
Like, why? Like,
no, it's annoying. Yeah. It's the worst. It's the worst part of these episodes.
It is.
But it's the most, it is the most amazing visual.
It looks awesome.
Like Mary Poppins helicopter lightsabering.
Yeah. But that's definitely my biggest complaint. But I wanted to talk about like Seven Sisters' death, where she's hanging there. Maul gives the classic "finish her."
Yeah,
I forget which murdery video game, Mortal Kombat. What's that? Yes. Street Fighter. Cool.
Finish good.
And then like Ezra can't, and she gets this smirk of like, "Here's my chance. I'ma f some things up."
Yeah.
And then Maul chucks his lightsaber at her, and we see her just like we see her legs kind of fall over.
Oh, it's such an effective shot. Like, it's pretty clear her body has been chopped to hell. But
You
just see her lightsaber fall, cut up, and then her legs. It's such a good shot.
And who could survive being bisected?
I mean, yes.
I mean,
but
maybe
still.
She was decapitated, though, right? Like, we didn't see.
Yeah.
They're like trying. I feel like with what you were saying, Matthew, they're trying to draw this bright line between the Jedi and the Sith that's maybe not as bright as they're trying to imply it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, like, the Jedi do kill people, right? They just, they're not going to kill a defenseless person. They're going to kill someone who's trying to kill them. Like, that's, they do that. They use lightsabers instead of just using, like, force power to be like, I'm going to immobilize you, or I'm going to put you to sleep, or I'm going to be like, you don't want to kill anybody right now. Yeah, they kill people. But here they're like, oh, we're going to back off of that a little bit. You know, and make it in this stark contrast to like the choice of like killing a defenseless person, like all the people you mentioned, or Luke at the end of Return of the Jedi, right? That's the, you know, strike him down and take your place by my side, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maul says to Ezra, like after this whole interaction, you gotta kill when necessary, like your enemies.
Right.
If you didn't, she would have killed you. Or your friends, which I think is like Maul
that
really knowing
his,
how to turn the screws.
Yeah, that was his level of manipulation, the next level thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because in that one regard, he's a little bit proven right in he blinds Kanan, almost kills him. I'm not quite sure how you hit someone in the face with a lightsaber without just chopping the top of your head off, but fair enough.
Restraint, yeah.
It's kind of an interesting visual thing.
Maybe you didn't even hit them. Maybe it's just like he almost hit him and the sparks from it blinded him.
Ahsoka later will like chop off part of Vader's helmet without touching his face.
Yeah,
which again,
that's precision.
I have questions, but moving on. You're right that Solo happens in between these two stories, but Solo's made later. So if you're watching this, the last time you've seen...
Maul?
Well, actually the order's a little screwed up because the seventh season of Clone Wars came out later, but like... Mm. Even with the last time you saw Ahsoka and Maul together, Ahsoka whipped his ass in a lightsaber fight. And now it's Maul against it. You know, they had just been like, no, he's bad. We're taking him out now. I think Maul loses that fight pretty clearly against Kanan and Ahsoka. And so the fact that like he's able to get them to lower their guard enough that he can attack and blind Kanan and then be able to just focus on Ezra. Yeah, he's kind of right. You got to, you know, and again, I'm not saying that like they should have just killed him on sight. But it's interesting how they don't just present that as, of course, that's wrong, that's terrible, you should never do that. They show him getting a tactical advantage in the fight because he's willing to, they're not just like, oh, we're going to kill you right now.
Yeah, I mean, he does present the, like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Mm-hmm. Compelling argument, right? Which is true. And they need him to help defeat the Inquisitors because bonus third Inquisitor. This whole, like, underestimating, putting your guard down thing is ultimately what gets Maul, not really defeated, but, like, chucked off a building, which, very non-lethal, right? Because Kanan's blinded and is wearing, like, a Temple Guard helmet, and Maul, like, when Kanan's all like, okay, it's you and me, Maul seems to stifle a laugh of, like, okay, buddy, I'll make this quick, don't worry. And, yeah, gets his butt handed to him.
Letting one's guard down is obviously very dangerous, right? I mean, there's mercy. Like, mercy is a choice, right? And... it can have consequences, but mercy followed by letting one's guard down is much more apt to have consequences. Or even not mercy followed by letting one's guard down. Just kind of like, oh, just being too casual, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah, but it's classic Maul. I mean, in the original Phantom Menace duel with Obi-Wan, he has Obi-Wan hanging by his fingertips.
Yeah.
And chooses to just like use sparks to taunt him.
Right. He
could have just done That's anything true. Else to finish him. So
yeah, just cut off his
I feel like it's pretty on brand for Maul's character to see a blind foe and then be like, I'm just going to toy with him a little and then lose.
Yeah.
Oh, if there is a road towards drama and a road towards not drama,
oh.
Maul is always taking, like, he is the definition of extra, you know, in just that wonderful way.
Oh, speaking of extra, Darth Vader's entrance into this episode.
Chopper flies an TIE fighter, and then Darth Vader comes in flying on a TIE fighter.
Yeah.
Standing on top of his TIE fighter as it, like, autopilot descends to the temple, and, like, Ezra looking up.
So good.
So presumably he had to get out of his TIE fighter on the surface and then, like, stand on top of it and be like, okay, now autopilot down. Okay.
Activate lightsaber.
Right. Pull out cape. Well, like, way what earlier than heck? You need to. Yeah, make sure that you've got a nice breeze.
Yeah,
coming,
yeah.
Right? So that
Again,
you can get that nice
amazing
billowy effect.
Visual.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I saw someone breaking down just how extra Vader is often. And this scene is, there's two scenes that we're focused on. One is in Rogue One at the very end where he's, like, in total darkness just as lightsaber appears to kill all those troops on Leia's ship. He has to turn off all of his machinery. He has to stop breathing for like 60 seconds so that all the lights on his chest go off just so he can have that moment. And here it's the same thing. Someone pointed out, like, they're actually in an enclosed space. There's no wind to make his cape do that. He's using the Force to both control the TIE fighter and make his cape do the willowy cape thing.
Although the TIE fighter is moving, so there's probably some air resistance. I don't know. But I like the Force thing better.
Yeah.
I think it fits perfectly, right? Like, Vader says, oh, I've killed Anakin. Don't worry about that. But it's like, clearly Anakin's penchant for the dramatic, right? Is right there alive and well. Yeah.
I want someone to do a fan edit of that where a Force ghost of Qui-Gon is watching that and says, Anakin, you took my advice about theatricality rather literally. Which is a quote from Batman Begins. So do you want to talk, why does Kanan get blinded? Like, what's happening in the story for that to happen? I mean, it's obviously just kind of about him partially losing the fight to Maul, but, like, it seems like that's an important step in the journey with him and Ezra. What do you think is going on there?
There are several moments in this episode that foreshadow his being blinded, not in, like, in, like, a metaphorical kind of way. Ezra tells him that, you know, you should just trust me. Aren't you supposed to be my master? And I think it's this idea of Kanan is blind in so many ways about Ezra, like, Ezra's his blind spot. In that, like, he's got such sympathy for him because he's this kid, he's taking him in, he sees him almost like a son. And then, I don't know, it's just this, like, losing one sense to gain others, I think, kind of way. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got to be more in touch with the Force to really feel out what's going on, especially because, like, Ezra opening that holocron at the end of the episode, even something that he says when they're on the elevator together, Ezra tells Kanan, oh, Maul sees what I can't be, what I can be, and you don't see that. Yes, Maul does see what you can be, which is a Sith, which is, like, not great.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So Kanan losing his sight is an allusion to that, to, like, not being so blinded by Ezra and his, like, love for Ezra.
I think it's exactly right. I think there's so much going on there. And I don't want to spoil it, but I think that the themes that you're talking about are really going to see some payoff in season 3. As someone who talks about disability a lot, I'm not blind, but I do have another disability. And so I'm always kind of thoughtful of what happens when they make a character disabled and are they going to be true to that story? And I remember watching that being like, okay, what are they going to do with this? And again, without any spoilers, I think they do a fantastic job of making that part of his journey and his story.
I agree with all of that. I also think it's sort of a way of killing the master without killing the master. You know, where, like, they're always killing off mentors. And this is a way to let him still be a mentor, but not be a mentor in exactly, not like in all the ways, kind of. So they sort of, it's a way they kind of pull him back from being as central. Like, why is this older Jedi not as central as this young kid Jedi, right? And I think they do that to give room for Ezra to kind of grow in a way. Because I think there's this idea that, like, if you have a mentor who's so active and powerful, then the student is kind of has a sort of a ceiling from that. Which, you know, in general, I'm not super crazy about, but I do like that the way they did that here is instead of by bumping off the character, it was by developing the character further and giving them a new aspect to who they are that then, you know, then that change he's dealing with. And obviously, being blind and a Jedi is not exactly the same as being blind and not a Jedi, right? Mm-hmm. But I think they don't constantly, like, they let it be a real thing going forward. And again, not, you know, no spoilers, but yeah. I did enjoy that aspect of his character going forward.
I agree that it sets up the future ascendancy of the character of Ezra Bridger as the primary Jedi figure on this team, like, in terms of combat ability, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I also think it does set up, we don't want to talk about what is going to happen, but we see at the end of this episode, he unlocks the Sith holocron. And earlier they said, right. You know, you have to be a Sith to unlock it.
They said you can't, no Jedi can unlock it. Which okay. I think is a very Fair important enough. Difference, but yeah.
Okay. So Ahsoka could have opened it.
They are setting up this conflict within Ezra and taking Kanan a step back. In terms of either, you know, power level or attention, you know, like literally because he cannot see, is going to help pay off that story.
I think so. I've been talking with Riki and Sarah about how it's kind of fun watching this because I remember overall story beats, but I don't remember a lot of specific details. And so here, I actually don't remember if they do this, but I think this is where I'm guessing they're leaning. Right now, Ezra's at this place where he's like, do I explore the dark side some? Was Maul right about any of this? And the fact that that's happening, Maul defeated Kanan to some extent in the fight. Kanan somewhat won, but like Maul significantly damaged Kanan. And so I think for Ezra, that's a really good time for him to start wondering, like, is Kanan right? Does Maul know something that Kanan doesn't that I need to pay attention to? So it's a great way of like of setting all that up.
And I think even in like Maul's downfall, right? Like, I think Ezra's like kind of cottoning on to what he's up to. Like, Maul tells him to have this gift and to not use it is the ultimate rejection of the gift, which I don't necessarily disagree with.
It's a twisted version of the Spider-Man power responsibility.
Yeah, and knowledge is power, as we've learned from this episode. The deeper I go into Rebels, the more I love it for its questioning of Jedi dogma. I don't know, first hearing about it in A New Hope, it's like, oh, the Jedi, so cool, so interesting. And I are like, they were a weirdo cult that kidnapped babies.
Yeah. And like ran the universe.
Yeah.
But we're like, oh, no, we're not running things.
Don't worry about it. We're knights now. We're protectors of peace. What? Yeah.
One thing. You wonder, like, if the Jedi Council ever did some hand wavy, like, you don't have to make us, you know, pay these fees. Right. Taxes. What are taxes?
Oh my God, not another episode about taxes.
I know I brought up the High Republic books a couple times. Again, they really start painting a lot more of that picture. One thing we learn is that those books are set about like 250 years before all this stuff that we're watching now. And one of the things that those books are talking about is a new chancellor who's just been elected. And she's the first chancellor in, I think, 500 years who isn't a Jedi.
Mm.
So it's like the Jedi used to actually hold political power and run the Senate.
Yeah.
So that was a very interesting, like, yeah.
Not like any modern religions on Earth or anything like that.
Nope.
One clarification on Kanan and his understanding of the Jedi. I think he was 14 actually during Order 66.
Yeah.
So okay. I know I just listened to the last podcast. So I think his understanding of the Jedi was like closer to where Ahsoka's was. I think she was like 16 maybe then.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she's just a couple years older. So he certainly didn't complete his training, right? He wasn't like about to take the trials or anything. But he definitely, I mean, you know, 14, like that's an adult in some cultures, right? I mean,
right.
And so I think he has an idea, but like, he doesn't have an idea from being an adult for a period of time interacting in the whole Jedi world. He has it as being a student from a small child until a teenager and then having a traumatic experience that cut the whole thing short.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. In the Bad Batch, he doesn't look 14 to me. He looks like 11.
But
maybe.
He sounds 35. So even that out.
Right. Well, right. I mean, yeah.
You know, also, I don't know how Dathomiri age, but Maul's old at this point. Maul was in his 20s or 30s or, like, you know, whatever that age is for Death Mirror when he fought Qui-Gon, when Anakin is, like, you know, 7 or 8 mm-hmm. or 9 years old, I think, at this point. So we're now, like, 30 years past that, and Maul's still looking, you know, pretty spry.
Yeah, well, I mean, mechanical legs partly help. And, like, Kanan does call him Grandpa at one point, which, yeah, it's kind of weird because you're like, huh? But yeah, it's I don't know. That's another thing that grinds my gears about Star Wars and ages is, like, who knows, right? Species all right, age right. at different rates. So you can just be like, eh, whatever. Doth Miri lived for 400 years, the end. Or, like, right. he was made by the Night Sisters, so he, like, was born and aged rapidly and stays in this, like, what we would call adult stage for, like, years and years and years and years, mm-hmm. and then he'll just die looking like this. But it's, like, my boyfriend Hondo Onaka, who I'm going to bring up again, in, like, the chronology, Galaxy's Edge is set pre-Rise of Skywalker, mm-hmm. and he's, like, a spry young chicken running this totally legitimate trading company. Extra legitimate, don't worry about it. But, like, he should be, like, 103 or something like that. And, like, he's not, right? So it's just, like, age is weird. Obi-Wan age is super strange, too.
Look, 19 years under the Tatooine sun, it does something.
To the stress of watching over baby Luke. Yeah, I think we just kind of have to, like, hand wave away the way people yeah. look and, like, their aging. Because it's just, you can't make it make sense.
You can't. I mean, unless you're like, well, so-and-so was in carbonite for this long, sure. or they were, you know, they were traveling through space, and because mm-hmm. relativity, the time passed differently, and like that, you could, but like Star Wars isn't about trying to science something, yeah. right?
I agree. Like yeah. Darth Maul, like he's lived a full life. He was the head of a crime syndicate. Who should 100% know who Jabba the Hutt is, BT Dubs?
Well, maybe he did, and he was just...
Oh, yeah, he definitely did, right? Ezra needs to stop using Jabba as a cover name.
Don't use a famous person as your, like, you know,
yeah.
like Chuck Finley or something.
Right? I'm David Bowie. You're very clearly not. Like, right.
The Sam Axe reference is appreciated.
Yeah, always.
All right, well, we've danced around it for a while, but let's get to the elephant in the room. Ahsoka and Vader. We've been building up to this all season long. You can't see it, but Sarah is literally bouncing in her chair as I mentioned the topic. What do y'all think about the way this storyline plays out?
All season. We've been building to this our entire lives.
Since the Clone Wars movie.
Yeah. Really? I mean, this... The payoff between these two characters is so well earned by all of Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
as you said, Matthew, the last 7 minutes of this episode are just absolutely beautiful in terms of the animation in all of the duels, the lightsabers, but also in just the emotions of what the characters say to each other and how they interact. It gets to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so worth it. A few episodes ago, we had, you know, Ahsoka in the temple being visited by a vision of Anakin being like, you abandoned me. And then her saying, like, I'm not going to abandon you now. But, like, there's this fight. And also, okay, so in the intro, you mentioned, like, a shadowy figure limping off into the distance.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe spoilery, but, like, that's very clearly Ahsoka, right? Like, you can see her hair.
Yeah, I did a screenshot and then zoomed in. And it is definitely someone with her, like, the hair, Leku.
Okay. Is it Leku for her species, or is that just Twi'lek? Anyway, that's a weird tangent we can go down later.
There wasn't, like, another one of her species, like, hanging out on the planet, right, that we don't know about. Like, yeah.
Who knows?
Hair tails, yeah.
The meeting between them, at the very beginning, right before they start their fight, we hear, like, the first few notes of Duel of the Fates, which, in my opinion, is the best thing to come out of the prequels. But it's that, it's the song that plays while Anakin and Obi-Wan are fighting,
right?
Yeah, but it starts with, like, the I cannot sing, but, like, the da na, right? And then, like, it goes into a sort of modified Duel of the Fates theme that runs underneath it. But there are so many, like, heart-wrenching moments too. Like, I know you mentioned it earlier, Matthew, the, like, I'm no Jedi, when she says she's gonna avenge Anakin's death. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
And Vader says, that is not the Jedi way. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, yeah. So the whole thing is, like, they're going back and forth. This is where she has, and I think actually kind of a nice parallel of Luke's journey. You know, at first she was not ready to accept it. She couldn't believe this. Now is when she finally believes. Like she says something like, you know, Anakin, you couldn't be my master. Anakin would never be so vile. Mm-hmm. And he says, I've destroyed Anakin. And then she says, like, I will avenge him. And he says, that's not the Jedi way. And she says, I am no Jedi.
Which is a Lord of the Rings reference, right?
I am no man. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
I mean, I screamed at the TV, like, I'm not a Jedi expletive. But, like, yeah, same sentiment, right? But just that whole, like, that whole section of dialogue is so, like, iconic and so perfect, right? That back and forth is just fantastic.
Because I think part of why I love it so much is that it's kind of what we've been talking about. This whole, like, the whole episode where we've been talking this idea of, like, there are things that the Jedi won't do. And that maybe it's a good thing they don't do it. Like, I think killing helpless prisoners is not great. But that maybe sometimes they take it a little too far. Maybe sometimes they don't kill the person who has to be killed, you know, to protect other people or whatever it is. I sound like a homicidal maniac. Hopefully you know what I mean in the context of all this. And so Anakin kind of being, you know, Anakin has this whole idea of, like, the Jedi are weak. The Jedi are weak. And so him sort of, like, toying with her and being like, you can't do that. You're a Jedi. And her saying, I am no Jedi. It just... I think that is maybe my favorite exchange dialogue-wise in all of Star Wars. It's just so powerful and says so much about her character. And, like, you watch that and then watching The Mandalorian when Mando wants her to train Grogu and she's like, I can't, I'm not a Jedi. It just connects so well.
Yeah.
The fact of her not train, like, I don't see why her not being a Jedi means she can't train him. That's, like, a separate thing. You know, like, maybe she should train him in not being a Jedi.
Yeah.
And just, like, using the Force. Yeah. When Ahsoka's like, ich bin kein Jedi. Oh, sorry. I watched it in German. But it's like, it's just such a good moment. And it translates across languages.
Yeah. And like, we get a sort of allusion to it in the first episode where she's talking to Maul and saying, like, why are you trying to get us to stay here? Why do you want us to stick around? What's your end game? And Maul's like, I can't face Vader alone, and I know he's coming because there's no way he could resist two Jedi and a part-timer, I think he calls her, right? So, like, this idea of, like, Ahsoka's not a Jedi is coming up over wink, and wink. Over. Yeah.
Like, he's not a Sith, she's not a Jedi.
Yeah.
And also, just to compare, throw into that as well, for anyone who watched, heard my coverage of the Clone Wars with Riki and Sarah, one thing I often said is that I think there's a wonderful parallel between Ahsoka leaving the Jedi and Asajj Ventress leaving the Sith. And somehow I didn't pick up on it until I watched it this time. The voice of the holocron, the voice of the Sith, is the voice of Asajj Ventress. It's the same voice actress. And I just I was so great. I love that. It just brought everything together so well.
Well, it's extra perfect because isn't, like, Ventress is the apprentice that ousted Maul for Palpatine, right?
No, Dooku becomes Sidious's apprentice, and then Dooku takes on Asajj Ventress, but that's why she never becomes Darth. Right.
She's an apprentice's apprentice.
Yeah. But and she also had, like, dealings with the Night... Was she, like, raised by the Night Witches? Yeah. Or Night Sisters? No?
She is a Night
Sister.
She is a Night Sister?
Yeah, okay.
She was a Night Sister, and Dooku came, and they gave her to him. But I think at a much older age than, like...
Maul
was
given. Yes, okay, that's the parallel. All right. But yeah, I also knew the voice sounded familiar, but yeah, didn't place that it was Ventress. That's fantastic. Ugh.
What I'm thinking of in terms of this exchange is Obi-Wan's classic line of only a Sith deals in absolutes, right? Which is just an absolute statement. And the Jedi dogma is very much littered with absolutes.
Oh, yeah.
And so... Yep. For Vader to say revenge is not the Jedi way, and then Ahsoka to deny that and say I am no Jedi, is like a rejection of all of this absolute dogma on both sides, and her embracing that middle ground of I am still on the light side of the Force, but I embrace revenge in this case.
Yeah.
And you know, we have seen Ezra struggle with the dark side now, and I think he's another one of these characters that can fit in the middle and find a way to access both sides of the Force in a more balanced way. Like, this is, we talk about this with the movies too, that all of Star Wars seems to be heading in this direction, where it's not light versus dark, you know, like in these galactic battles, but really more like light and dark within ourselves and trying to find that balance in our lives.
Right.
Yeah. I think, okay, two things. One, it's, she's like avenging and not revenging. So I think like she's embracing avenging instead of, right? And like, so she's not Thor? He says revenge.
We're the revengers.
We're the revengers.
I mean, I think avenge is just the verb of isn't it?
Like, they definitely come from the same root.
Yeah, but I feel like there's like, there's a difference, right? Where like, she's not doing it on her behalf. She's doing it on Anakin's behalf. And the fact that he is Anakin is kind of like a weird tweak in there, but.
Like, she's avenging someone as opposed to taking revenge on someone.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can dig it.
From a certain point of view. Thank you very much. Thanks. But also this idea of her rejecting this Jedi dogma, and then later in The Mandalorian, when we get her not letting Mando go see Grogu because, like, attachment bad. Ahsoka, we moved past this.
Right, right.
Why are you suddenly clinging to this? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is coming from you?
Yeah.
And Luke is someone who defeated Vader through attachment? Yeah. Defeated Vader and avenged Anakin in a way, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it also gets back to, Paul, you're kind of bringing this up, and something we've talked about in superhero ethics all the time, that a lot of times it's a bit frustrating that when writers want to establish like the morals of a good character, they blur the line between I will not kill and I will not murder. You know, because to me, there's a huge difference between I will fight someone, and if I'm having to use lethal methods of fighting, if I kill the person as part of the fight, I'm okay with that, versus I won't kill a helpless person. Like, I think if somehow Ahsoka, you know, completely disarmed Anakin Vader and had him helpless, I don't think she's going to execute him as part of her revenge. No. But I think she's like, I will fight you to the death because I want to defeat you to avenge Anakin and Anakin's memory.
I think a lot of what's at the root of some of this also is kind of the dogmatic adherence to theoretical principles versus making decisions based on the concrete context, sort of around what your own kind of values are or whatever. And I feel like that's what some of the characters have gotten to do. And that's sort of where they're kind of trending more. Whereas the Obi-Wans and the Yoda, like in the past, like they just, you know, they grew up in this system. And so I think these people like Kanan and Ahsoka and also Ezra, like who didn't have like the full Jedi experience to the point of staying in it for their whole lives, I think kind of get to take what they've learned, but they don't have to use all of it, and they don't have to adhere to it like it's dogma, but kind of like, what's the essence of it? And then kind of make their own decisions.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think we as a society have had these conversations, right, where we say something like, violence is not the answer. But then we are pretty loose about, you know, applying violence against, you know, Nazis, you know, punching Nazis.
Right, right.
So absolute dogma just doesn't hold up to the complexities of real life.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good way to put it.
That's the downfall of the Jedi, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's the downfall of the Jedi, but it's also, it's the lesson that Ahsoka learns when they kick her out but then offer her back in and she says no thank you. It's because her situation, dogma is very clear about what has to happen to her, even though her situation doesn't quite fit, her reality doesn't fit the philosophies, you know? And I think that's a big part of what she learns is like, they're too focused on dogma. I want to focus on, you know, the
real life. And they're so focused on this no attachment thing, right? The fact that they like she grew up with them, she trusts them, she loves so many people on the Jedi Knights. Why can't I think of the council? There we go. Right? The fact like that didn't mean anything at all. It's like, well, we think, you know, you may have done this heinous crime, so peace. Right?
Which is why I keep focusing on the fact that Kanan has attachments.
Right.
Like, I think it's such a great part of the story. The one thing I want to say about this, and then we should talk about, because there's still a whole bunch more of the fight between Vader and Ahsoka that we haven't even touched yet that's worth discussing. But I just want to say as well, I think this is one of the greatest examples of writers knowing how to use their big gun. I know this was the concern about like if Luke was going to show up in Mandalorian. I think it's a thing in a lot of things. When you're telling a story mostly about these kind of low-level people, but you've got this one person who can just kind of come in and like Captain Marvel, Superman, like take care of everything, that's a real problem in writing. And it can become, I think if they'd had Ahsoka coming in to save the day again and again and again, it just would make the story less interesting. And this is far, like, Ahsoka's been an advisor. Ahsoka's, like, come in and, like, slashed her lightsaber a couple times to help people. But this is the first time we really have Ahsoka participating in a fight in a major way. And I think it just shows such great restraint and planning on behalf of the writers to use her in this one space.
For sure. And Vader, too. Right? Like, Vader's shown up some, but they don't have Vader all the time. If they had Vader all the time, it would be like, why aren't these rebels dead? Like, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like Vader's got other stuff to do. Ahsoka has other stuff to do. And they saved them for this moment. And I think because of that, the payoff is way bigger than if they'd kind of just, like, had them constantly throughout.
And it's such, it provides such great closure as well. Or, like, semi-closure for their characters, right? Like, Ahsoka, who's thought this might be Anakin and is, like, pretty sure at this point, but, like, doesn't maybe want to admit it to herself, to, like, knowing it is, but it actually kind of isn't because, like, he killed Anakin, etc. Right. And, right, Anakin seeing Ahsoka again, who, like, he was expecting to be there. He expected her to come back into the Jedi fold. She didn't. Like, right? I think he kept expecting to see her. And he even says, like, when he gets there, your appearance here is, like, foretold or something like that.
There's a great parallel. The last time they were together, he was trying to bring her back into the Jedi. And now he's trying to bring her to the Sith. Like, he's just like, look, I switched teams, but I still want you on my team.
Yeah. Yeah. He just wants his pal who he cares about because he has attachments. Yeah.
So let's talk about the rest of the fight. You were sort of talking, Paul, they did a really good job of not cutting back and forth. There's a little bit of cutting here between the two of them and then also Ezra and Kanan dealing with the holocron, but it's all in the same room. And so I think it really works. And they kind of cut to them and then they cut back to Ahsoka and Vader. What happens in the rest of their fight and why is it significant?
Ezra has a delightful little line that he's got to get better at fighting. And then he goes off to go.
Such a great little
bit of humor. Like, it's just like a woof. Yikes. These guys are good. Bye. Got to go deal
with
this.
There's no one else even there. He's making a joke to himself.
Yeah. Good for you, Ezra.
And the audience.
It's like Vader and peak Ahsoka, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is the best we've ever seen Ahsoka fight, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, right? And, like, so he goes to try and get rid of the holocron because we've discovered that the Sith temple is a weapon that's powered by the holocron. And then he needs Kanan to come help him remove the holocron because rule of two. So they get the holocron. They're piecing out of there. Ahsoka and Vader are fighting. Ezra says, like, okay, we've got it. Come on. Let's get on the ship. Chopper shows up just in time. Kanan, Ezra get on the ship, but Ahsoka and Vader are still fighting. Ezra goes back for Ahsoka, and Ahsoka force pushes him out of the way. And then, like, behind her back, uses her lightsabers to stop Vader's, like, incoming blow, and, like, her and Vader keep fighting as the temple door closes and Ezra can't get back in.
Okay, but you're missing a chunk.
Missing a chunk.
Yeah. Vader knocks Ahsoka off of the temple down to, like, another level so she doesn't die like everyone else dies.
Yeah, who falls?
Or not. But so Vader defeats Ahsoka and then he comes back and uses the force to grab Ezra as he and Kanan are leaving. And then Ezra has this, like, it's him! And Kanan's like, I know!
I can't see, but I know!
I can feel the power of the force he's pulling you with.
Yeah.
And then Ahsoka runs back in and slashes Vader across his helmet. And then Matthew said earlier, somehow cuts the helmet open, but doesn't cut his face. And then he says her name, I believe, for the first time, right? Yeah. He says Ahsoka, and it's like half Vader voice, half Anakin voice.
Yeah.
And she just kind of cracks upon hearing that and seeing his eyes.
She says Anakin, too. Yeah. Yeah, I did forget about that.
And this is the moment where she says, I won't leave you, not this time.
It's so wonderfully done because it's, first of all, they actually got James Earl Jones to come back and do the voice of Vader for this, which is, like, they don't always get that. A couple of times that those actors come back, but it's wonderful they do it. And then, but as you said, in that moment, it switches between just James Earl Jones to also
Matt Lanter.
Is it? I want to say Matt Lanter. Lanter is how you pronounce it? Lanter, thank you. But yeah, but it's just, there's so much power. And it's just his eye, but, like, the way he's looking at her. It's funny. In an episode that will have also probably gone up by the time this episode goes up, or at least certainly will go up soon after, Rob McKenzie and I talk about some of the Thrawn books that are in the canon, one of which is the character of Thrawn spending time with Anakin in the past and Vader in the current. And that book really gets into how, like, inside Vader's head is this constant struggle of, like, I am not the Jedi, I'm not the Jedi, I'm not Anakin anymore. And so just seeing, like, that little bit of Anakin still peek out, like, it just seems like a wonderful, just, like, foreshadowing of what Luke is eventually going to find out.
Yeah.
I'd like to read that book, but I probably don't want to spend that long, so we'll just listen to the podcast.
It also, and maybe they're going to give this to us, because, like, the fact that we skipped past it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But if I end my time on this Earth... And nowhere in Lucasfilm have they ever given us the moment where Ahsoka and Luke first really connect. Because this scene, especially what it reminds me of, is I need the moment where Ahsoka learns that Luke was able to bring Anakin back. Like, it just, it's so, the pathos of this scene is so much that, like, when they gave it to us in Boba Fett, I'm like, oh yeah, no, that already happened. These two are fine. I'm like, show us that. Like,
right. Maybe in the Ahsoka show, which I'm now getting much more hyped for.
I've heard one theory, because apparently Christian Haydenson is also supposed to be in the Ahsoka show. And I was trying to figure that out. And one theory, I don't know if Riki, you're the one who suggested this theory to me, but the more I think about it, the more I kind of like it, is that maybe Force Ghost Anakin is talking to.
Yes.
You hated that theory when we talked about it.
I suggested this. You were like, no.
I hated that theory, and I'm slowly coming around to it.
Sounds better than any of the other possibilities. Also, casting spoilers are the worst. But like finding out that Rosario Dawson was Ahsoka in The Mandalorian, like, first of all, then it's like, okay, well, you know, she's going to show up and it's not like a big surprise, but maybe they did that so that something else could be a big surprise. But like, I watched this after that, or at least after I knew that casting bit. So like, whatever happens to Ahsoka here, I'm like, well, I know she's going to be okay because I know she exists like after Return of the Jedi, right? But, like, also somehow she has to not be around, so, like, it's so confusing. It was really a massive challenge for them to figure out how to, like, how to bench whatever Jedi they used here for, like, the trilogy, you know? And then be like, yeah, then we'll take him back.
And it's funny how, and we'll talk about that later, but how they've, some of them they sideline, and then some they've just, like, they took random picture of like an old grizzled guy in Return of the Jedi who's with like the Han Solo group.
Oh yeah, yeah, I heard that one.
You know, and, like, stuff like that.
That does not look like.
Shh, it's Rex. Don't worry about it.
Tamara Morrison.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've gone quite a while. There's so much in this episode, though. Is there any kind of topics or questions or points people want to make or bring up or ask that we haven't covered yet?
The last minute, 2 minutes, where it's just there's no dialogue. There's just music. And it's like all of the stories are wrapping up here. Kanan and Ezra and Chopper return to Chopper base. And we see Hera reunite with Kanan. And I guess no one called ahead and told them what had happened. Because she sees him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what?
I mean, go ahead, but I have a personal story.
So Hera sees Kanan with the eye coverings and realizes what has happened and goes and hugs him. And they share a tender moment. Ezra looks at everyone else, but especially Rex, and gives like the nod, the head nod no or whatever, to indicate, you know, Ahsoka is not with them, and seeing Rex absolutely crestfallen over this. You know, and everyone else too. Zeb and Sabine are also there, and they realize that Ahsoka is not with them. But especially Rex, because of the history that they have. And then, you know, we see Maul escape, so he's not done for yet. We see Vader survive, obviously. And then we see Ahsoka, right? Like, you mentioned that it is actually Ahsoka. I don't know why the summary says a shadowy figure.
Yeah, it's definitely
Ahsoka. It's not Ahsoka.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the owl. So we talked about the owl on the previous episode, and I looked it up. It's actually called a, I think it's called a Morai?
Yeah, they name it in this episode summary, if I still have it.
I think it's like condor or something.
That's the species.
A condor.
This is specifically called Morai. If you will recall from the episode with the son and the daughter from Clone Wars on Mortis,
mm-hmm.
that That is the origin of this animal. And so because of what happens in that, this has somehow become like Ahsoka's companion. Not necessarily like that this is the same animal, but this animal is kind of like always around Ahsoka and represents her.
Oh, interesting. Because the last episode, we were talking about, like, what does it mean when an animal showed up? And I was like, oh, it's a dark side thing somehow. But no, it was a great foretelling that Ahsoka's coming back. Mm. That's really cool.
I was going to say I listened to the last podcast and was going to say sometimes an owl is just an owl. But I guess sometimes an owl is not just an owl.
And apparently the owl is in the Mandalorian as well when Ahsoka is there. So.
Oh, yeah. That was, for sure, in that episode. I can picture that, I think. I don't know.
Which I don't know if this is intentional or if this is just my brain connecting, but like the owl is very much associated with Athena.
Mm.
And I feel like I Ahsoka being kind of like, obviously it's a completely different pantheon, different universe, but like she has that sort of energy to me of a devotee of Athena, you know? So I think that like, I hope that like somewhere in someone's writer's mind.
I thought you were
like,
going to say Athena herself, but sure.
Perhaps then it is also a reference to George Lucas's other classic, Clash of the Titans, which has that weird metallic owl.
Did George Lucas do that? Yeah. Oh, that movie is so bad. I didn't realize that
was the original one, not the Liam Neeson reboot.
Oh, I don't even...
I haven't even seen that, but I just...
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah, the original is special.
Interesting. So my brief personal story about, like, nobody calling ahead and telling Hera was, like, when I was 7, I was in a really bad bike accident and messed up my face super good. And my grandparents called ahead and told my mom, like, hey, her face is messed up. And my mom was like, chill, that's fine. I'm prepared. We'll take her to the hospital as soon as you get here. Just, like, drop her off. We're good. And, like, she instantly broke into tears when she saw my super messed up face. And so I think, like... someone can call ahead and be like, hey, your husband has had an accident. He's blind now. FYI. And then, like, have him step off the ship and see him with your own eyes and still be, like, devastated. Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah, I thought it was a little unclear whether they'd called ahead or not. My perception this time kind of was that they had, but that it was still unclear. I have a story with my grandparents. They had this big hole in their house. It was like a spiral staircase that went down to the basement, but there was no staircase. And there was just a hole.
This is worse than no handrails.
Yeah, and I fell through the hole. Oh, no. And I landed on this big, like, there's like this big rock, like, boulder thing in the basement. And I guess I was hurt, but I was fine. So, just like Star Wars, falling, you know, sometimes it's okay. Yeah. Don't try this at home.
That does not, please do not jump off of cliffs.
I didn't say jumping was okay, I said falling. It's different.
We are not recommending falling. Falling, gravity is real. Please obey.
Eighth brother learned the hard way.
Don't jump off the roof of your house with a spinning lightsaber toy.
I don't even want. Like, how does?
Oh my goodness!
Or even without a spinning lightsaber toy.
Bad ideas.
All right, I think we've reached the punchy stage.
I have one more tiny thing.
Yeah, Sarah and then Paul.
I was just gonna say, like, if you want to hear my super sweet Aladdin Twilight of the Apprentice comparisons, hit me up.
Yeah,
I guess on Instagram,
because
that's the only place I'm active. But yeah, I have thoughts and feelings, but it's...
No, I want to hear them now.
You want to hear them now?
Can you give us just like a 30-second summary?
30-second summary? Okay, so it's the scene in Aladdin, Disney's Aladdin, where Aladdin is in the prison, and Jafar has disguised himself as a helpless old man, and is like, oh, I need your young legs, which I mean, I think is a very clear parallel, to come help me Cave of Wonders it up. And so Abu / Chopper and Aladdin / Ezra, like, go out to help Jafar collect the lamp from the Cave of Wonders. Mm-hmm. But there's just, like, so many scenes that are so visually similar. Like, Ezra first grabbing the holocron is basically just a mirrored shot of Aladdin grabbing the lamp. And then Aladdin grabbing Jafar's hand and, like, being told to pass him the lamp so that Jafar can grab onto the lamp and not Aladdin is, like, the same thing as Maul grabbing onto the holocron instead of Ezra, and they're both dangling off this cliff, and it's, like, a creepy inside place, but maybe it's outside. Anyway, watch that scene, and then go watch that chunk from Aladdin. It starts, like, 25 minutes into the movie.
At first I thought you brought this up with the first episode of Rebels, and I thought it was coincidence, but now I'm kind of getting convinced. Like, I am drinking your tea.
Yeah, thank you.
Because, like, I am on this conspiracy train, because we talked about how in the first episode the introduction to Ezra is very much like the introduction of Aladdin and like robbing from the street fair and stuff. And they're both referred to as street rat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I think he's supposed to like look to live, a little bit like him. Like,
he does look a little bit like him.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's more an homage theory.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Dave Filoni is an Aladdin fan. Got it. Okay.
No doubt.
Paul, what's your tiny little thing?
I just liked the lights and the sounds when they were lifting the big rocks. That's not a big deep theory or anything, but I thought the red lighting and the sounds of the rocks like growling, it sounded like lava and like growling, like this guttural sound and there's so much suspense, you know, they're just standing there like lifting their arm basically, but like there's just so much tension there as they're like walking under these really heavy doors, I guess, essentially, you know. And I just thought the use of sound and lighting was just so good there. And I mean, the whole, both two episodes, I feel like they put so much attention to the lighting, like when Kanan's wearing the mask and he ignites his lightsaber and there's like this blue glow, and there's all these red glows going on, like so many lightsabers in this episode, in these two episodes.
Just on that, I remember watching it this time and it reminded me of one of the few moments from Attack of the Clones that I really loved, but I think one of the great moments is when Anakin and Obi-Wan and Dooku are all fighting with lightsabers in this pretty dark cave. And they keep like, you know, posturing and moving their own lightsabers in front of their faces. And you see like the red glow in front of Dooku's face and like the green and blue glows in front of Anakin. I think they're both green, but whatever it is. I still think the best lightsaber fight in animation, possibly in all of Star Wars, is the one at the end of Clone Wars Season 7. This one's very close, though. And like, it's not as drawn out, it's not as elaborate, but it clearly feels like, I think they were redoing Clone Wars Season 7 around the same time they were doing this.
Yeah.
And like, the same people had to be at work on both, because like, there's one scene where it's Vader and Ahsoka from a real like bird's eye view. They're like pretty small in the frame compared to the whole temple, but still you can see exactly what's happening in the fight just by watching the colors of the lightsabers move. And that, plus the scenes where it's Ezra and Ahsoka and Maul, so you've got like the red, the blue, and the white of Ahsoka all working together, is just so well done.
The set design, if that's the correct term for this arc, is like fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love the like underground city. It's got such a strange vibe, right? It's very like off-putting. Totally agree with you, Paul, about the lights. Like, I specifically remember Ezra hanging off the side of the temple, and you can see kind of like the hazy blue outline of his lightsaber, and like the red of the Inquisitor, and then of Maul coming to like rescue him. Yeah, and I think like one scene that I really love, I think, is near the very end of the first episode, when it's the three Inquisitors versus Kanan, Ahsoka, and Maul, and they kind of like line up in that very like kind of Western cinematic action with their lightsabers crossed. Yeah.
So good.
Love that.
So I have a final thing, which is a tweet from 2 days ago, which was April Fool's, but I believe this to be true. It's a tweet from Sam Witwer, fantastic voice actor. He says, "It was 11 years ago today that I received a call from my friend Dave Filoni. I need Darth Maul. Can you do it?" And in that moment, I panicked and I lied and said, "Yeah, man, no problem." And we have reaped the rewards of that. And in this episode, he did an amazing job of giving us a very different performance as Maul.
Yeah, he did. Love it.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, too, because I remember seeing that tweet. I thought it was the animator, which, again, I think like animating a character that's been seen in live action and that is such a distinctive look as Maul is also a very challenging thing to do. And granted, they've been doing it for a while. But yeah, either way, I think it works for both the voice actor as well as the animator. So, well, thank you all so much. I'm really glad we get to do this. Riki and Sarah, I know we've been enjoying everything about Rebels, but we've been so excited to do this episode. So glad we got to talk about it. Paul, so good to have you here with us as well. Paul, I know you started making videos again around poker stuff. Where can people find what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm Zen Madman Poker on YouTube and making a bunch of stuff. And I just want to give a shout out for this podcast that I'm on right now, that having listened to the last episode, I really enjoyed it and I appreciated the shout out. And I definitely agree with everything you were saying that I would have said about, you know, the slaughter of all the you know, the spiders, the indigenous fauna, and and also, you know, droid liberation. I loved the whole AP5 chopper dynamic and all that. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to, if I'm not on that many more of these podcasts, to listening to more of the episodes.
Definitely. And Sarah, I think you are still creating cool things for sale.
Yeah, for sale is kind of like a question mark hanging in the air. I'm trying to sell through Instagram exclusively. I do have an Etsy that has nothing in it. You can check it out. It's Hayashi Ceramics /Etsy.HayashiCeramics/shop or something like that. But my Instagram is the best way to find me. It's at Sarah Hayashi Art. And yeah, cool. Anything that is for sale will be on there as well as in the Etsy shop, maybe.
And we've mostly been talking about your stuff, but Riki, I don't understand Pokemon, so I don't understand what you're talking about, but I know you're tweeting a lot about Pokemon stuff. What's, for people who are Pokemon fans, what are they going to find on your Twitter?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at Rikipedia Go, where I tweet about the mobile phone game Pokemon Go, and coming soon, I'm doing my research and getting ready to begin streaming some of that.
Awesome. Cool. Look forward to seeing that. So, well, thank you all, listeners. Definitely check out all the awesome stuff that all three of my guests are doing. If you want to find out more about the other podcasts that I'm on, go to theethicalpanda.com. There, of course, you'll also find great ways to give us feedback. We love your questions. We love the thoughts. It just, you know, really makes the conversations worthwhile. So on behalf of myself, all these great guests, thank you all so much for tuning in, and have a great day.